Hello again. You're listening to the news at one. The government looks set to extend a COVID ban on evictions and rent increases for some tenants until next January. The measures were brought in last year to protect renters during the pandemic. Housing Minister Dara O'Brien has also brought a memo to Cabinet today introducing a cap on rent deposits. Protections for renters negatively impacted by COVID, freezing rents and banning evictions, were due to lapse on the 12th of July. The new measures will need to be approved by the Dáil and the Shannon. We can talk now from our Dáil studio to Housing Minister Dara O'Brien. A very good afternoon to you, Minister, and
thank you very much for
coming from Cabinet to give us some details on what you're proposing. Is the plan at this stage for extending some of these protections beyond next month?
Well, thanks, Brian, for giving me an opportunity to talk to you on this. I think, firstly, we're going to extend the protections for those who have been most severely affected by COVID. And I'm going to extend the eviction ban effectively and rent increase ban for tenants who have sought protections under the Residential Tenancies Act. So those are tenants who may have lost their jobs because of COVID, are in receipt of social welfare payments, and, you know, recognising the fact that the pandemic is still with us, that, you know, people's take-home pay and their salaries have been affected by it. So via a very simple self-declaration, they can seek protections under this Act right through to the 12th of January 2022. So that would have meant that we've had special additional tenancy protections on top of what's there already for about 22 months. And this is the fifth piece of tenancy legislation that I've brought forward. It's proportionate and it's targeted at those who need it most. So I was pleased to get approval by my Cabinet colleagues for this measure and that I'll be bringing into the Dáil and Shannon very, very quickly in advance of the 12th of July.
To avail of this protection, tenants will have to make the declaration. What will they be required to demonstrate in order to make that declaration?
Well, those who've already made the declaration, Brian, and are covered under the existing acts, this will extend it further for them. That's the first thing to say. And there's about over 500 who have sought the protections. A small amount, yes, but what I would say is that only 2% of our tenancies thankfully end up in any type of dispute. There's 300,000 tenancies out there at the moment. Less than 2% end up in dispute. But for other people who wish to seek these protections, they would very simply, by way of a self-declaration, have to demonstrate that their income has been negatively affected by COVID-19, they may be in receipt of any social welfare payment, and that they would be at risk of homelessness.
And they would need to provide documentation to back that up, would they?
It's a simple declaration, actually, Brian, and that's what it does there. I don't expect it to be challenged. Anyone who has sought the protections, the vast majority have received them just via the self-declaration. So,
and does
we
it matter
kept it as simple as we can?
Okay, does it matter if they're in arrears or not?
Yeah, well, there's two exceptions to it. One, as I think listeners will understand, is if it was very serious criminal or antisocial behaviour. And the second one is the willful non-payment of rent effectively. So if someone is over 5 months rent arrears, that they could not seek that. Because we do have, and I'd say to listeners, people who are listening in, we still have the emergency rent supplement payment that's there. Mm-hmm. So anyone who needs assistance to pay their rent through this pandemic, we'll get that through the Department of Social Protection, and I'd encourage people to do so. But obviously, we can't have a situation if, like most of our landlords are you know, would be very normal people as well, who own the majority of them just one property. If someone is withholding rent willfully, well, that is an exception to receiving the supports here.
Okay, what, Minister, about other tenants who mightn't fall into the category we've been discussing? Because there was a rent freeze brought in last year, so the 4% increase that landlords could have brought forward in rent pressure zones was frozen. Is it not the case that from the 12th of July, landlords will be able to catch up, if you like, on that freeze, that many tenants could face, perhaps many will face, increases of as much as 8%?
Yeah, and that's a concern, certainly. The rent pressure zones are due to be replaced this year, and I've flagged in the Dáil, actually, and publicly, that I was bringing forward a rent reform bill in the autumn. Now, this particular issue around rent increases being rolled over is something, actually, that from research there was goes back some time. So I'm looking at measures in that space. I don't want to be too prescriptive on it or descriptive on it at this stage, but I am working on it.
So what happens to tenants then who face an 8% rent increase from their landlord on the 13th of July?
Well, this rent bill that I'll be bringing to the Dáil will be in advance of that date. and I'm looking at potential measures that I could bring forward in advance of that. But that's still being worked through. This is an issue that has actually been with us since 2016, and most didn't know it was there. Yeah. So we've got to, I'm going to try to address it, and I'll address
it. Are you in a position, though, Minister, to say to people that they won't be facing potentially 8% increases in their rents from next month?
What I'm in a position to say, Brian, is that I'm working on it right now to bring forward a resolution to it. It's a serious issue. What I would say also to people, to keep it in context, because the rent pressure zones themselves and the legislation that underpins it is due to expire at the end of this year.
Yeah.
And I'll be bringing forward a new suite of rent reform measures there
But saying, Minister, that you're working on it isn't much reassurance for people in what we know is an extremely tight housing market who are fearful of what they may face in a matter of weeks.
I would hope, Brian, to have measures to deal with this and other aspects in a very, very short space of time. I think you might understand that I'm not in a position to detail them quite yet, but I will be doing so. I am working on it, and I want to assure people that, like I have with the other pieces of legislation I've brought forward in relation to rental protections, I've been good to my word on that. I've ensured that protections increase. We've also tackled in the bill that I brought to Cabinet today the whole issue of student rents, which I think is really important, that we're restricting the amount of the total value of what can be sought up front from any tenant, okay, including a student, to 2 months. And that was a all big right. issue before, so that includes the deposit as well. So this legislation here is very significant, Brian.
Okay.
And
Yes.
Sorry.
The clock is slightly caught up on us, and perhaps we can leave it there. But thank you very much indeed for your
time
this afternoon. Let's get some reaction to what Minister Dara O'Brien has been saying. We're joined by Sinn Féin's housing spokesperson, Eoghan O'Brien. A very good afternoon to you, Deputy O'Brien. Thank you for taking our call this afternoon. What's your reaction, what we've been hearing there from Dara O'Brien, about extending, at least for some tenants, the COVID protections?
Well, it's important, of course, to understand that the government stripped the overwhelming majority of renters of any protections on the 22nd of April. And those tenants, since the 22nd of April, have been potentially subject to rent increases, including their 8% rent increases that you spoke about. So that's already a live prospect. Look, obviously, I welcome the extension of the protections for the 500 renters that are covered by this bill. But that's 5% of 300,000 registered tenancies. And in the same period as those 500 renters availed of that written declaration protection, over 2,500 warning letters for rent arrears have been issued to tenants. So there's a very, very large number of tenants, particularly since the 22nd of April, who are genuinely at risk of notice to quit and of evictions. And that's why we have called from the very start of this that those COVID-19 protections for genuine tenants who are in genuine difficulty to be extended to the end of the year, but also given where rents are at more generally in the market, we need a 3-year ban on rent increases, because it is simply not conceivable that any tenant who's paying, for example, €1,700 or more, which is the average rent now in Dublin City, should be hit with any level of rent increase, let alone a rent increase of 8%.
But focusing on those, if I can, who are maybe under particular financial pressure, does this plan put forward by the Minister not address that, because people who are threatened with eviction, who can't afford to pay, can by this declaration apply for the protection that will be available?
The difficulty, however, is you have to have experienced income loss due to COVID-19, be on a COVID-19 related payment, and submit this written declaration. So we know a lot of tenants out there who have done everything they can to keep paying the rent. They might not have lost income, but they are really struggling because of the challenges of COVID-19. And then they're hit with a rent increase, 4% or 8%, and they start to fall into arrears. They have no protections whatsoever. Again, as the Minister said, we're not looking for protections for renters who are willfully not paying the rent when they have the ability to do so. But what we're saying is, in these exceptional circumstances, any tenant, not just the very narrow category of tenants that the Minister has discussed, should have that protection till the end of the year. But there's a broader issue here. I mean, for example, why isn't this legislation simply going to outlaw rolling over 2 or 3 years' rent increases? If it's 4% a year, then a simple amendment to the Residential Tenancies Act would provide for that. Unfortunately, it wasn't brought for Cabinet today. And there's the broader issue, of course, of is it acceptable when rents are already so high for them to keep rising?
Okay.
Just on the measures with respect to students.
Briefly, if you can, Eoghan.
Yeah, the real congratulations here is to the US side. They led the campaign for this change, and I tabled a piece of legislation signed by 59 opposition TDs, which passed in April, legislation on these matters. I want to welcome the fact that under pressure both from the USI and from Sinn Féin and other opposition TDs, the Minister has now acted. But there is a loophole in what he's proposing that we need to be very careful of. If we're saying it's a month's rent and a month's rent deposit in advance, that should be it. And this idea that students allegedly who want to pay more than that can do so, that's a loophole that could be exploited and I think should be removed from the proposal.
Before I let you go, I'd like to get your response to that report in the Irish Independent today that Sinn Féin members posed as opinion pollsters. They were, it suggested, supplied with fake IDs for a non-existent polling company and were questioning people about their voting intentions. Can you confirm that Sinn Féin engaged in this?
Yes, so particularly over the period from 2010 onwards, we would have done an amount of what we call localised polling. We're not the only political party to do it. It's a practice that's quite widespread. Mm. And given the expense of polls, particularly when our party was smaller and had less resources, it was a key way for us to, I suppose, try and level the playing field with the bigger parties who often had more resources.
So your party members who presented themselves as employees of Irish Market Research Agency, that's an agency which doesn't exist, and they identified themselves as that on the doorsteps.
Yeah, I'd be very upfront with you. We would have done exactly that kind of local polling. Again, I would stress we're not the only political party that does it. Now that we have more resources,
in this way. Other parties they employ polling companies, but the issue here is Sinn Féin members misrepresenting themselves as pollsters to voters.
Well, these individuals were engaged in collecting polling data in a very straightforward way. That data was always anonymised and used solely for the purposes of polling. And again, I would say we are not the only political party that engages in this.
Did they have fake IDs?
They'll have to answer for how they do it, and so far they haven't been as forthcoming as we have been.
Well, did your members have, were they supplied with fake IDs?
They would have had ID badges that would have had their real names and photographs and the name of a marketing research company.
So effectively they lied to people on the doorsteps?
I wouldn't describe it as lying to people on the doorsteps. They were out collecting polling data for the purposes of...
But they knowingly misrepresented themselves as employees of a company that didn't exist.
I suppose the only thing I can say, Brian, is this is a common part of election practices. Again, all political parties, particularly the larger political parties...
The parties that spoke to Philip Ryan for the Irish Independent said that they weren't aware of this had been done in this way among their polling. It was done by professional polling companies. But they can speak for themselves. You will account, presumably, for the behaviour of Sinn Féin.
I will. But what I would say is I think the other parties' responses were very ambiguous and vague today. But leaving that aside...
Yeah. The report quotes the Sinn Féin documents as saying the polling took place in several election campaigns since 2010. So how long did it continue for?
So it would have gone from 2010, I think, up until about 2015 or 2016. And again, as I said on another news broadcast this morning, as the party got more resources and grew, we were able to obviously rely exclusively on private polling companies, which is what we do today.
Was it used in your own election in 2016?
We would have used it in advance of my 2016 election, but not subsequent elections in Midwest.
And the information, where was it stored, Owen O'Brien? Who had access to it?
So the information, and again, just to stress, just like any opinion poll, it is completely anonymised. We would have had access to it in our election directorate in the constituency.
And just to be clear about this, you had members of your own party in your own constituency in Dublin West in advance of the 2016 election out on doorsteps pretending to be pollsters.
They were collecting polling data. But can I also say, Brian, if I had the resources and employed a private company, they wouldn't have been declaring that they were being employed to do the poll on behalf of Sinn Féin. It would have also been anonymised. That's the nature of polling.
Yeah, but they would have been representing themselves as working for companies that actually existed.
Sure, and people can make their own judgment of that. But again, I just want to stress, the polling activity we were doing was no different to any other polling activity, whether by professional companies or the informal polling that's done by political parties on a regular basis. It was fully anonymised, and the information was used solely for the purposes of political polling, which is a commonplace practice.
Very good. Owen O'Brien of Sinn Féin, thanks for talking to us.